Namaskar.
Bienvenue.
I'm from Bangalore, India.
Dublin, Ireland.
Turkey.
The Philippines.
This is Feet into Words.
I came here to study.
To work. To volunteer.
Build a life of my own.
Welcome to Feet into Words.
Esto es Con los pies en dos mundos.
Bir ayağım burada, bir ayağım orada yaşıyorum.
Welcome to Feet into Worlds.
Polish food and Chinese food don't have much in common, but there's one ingredient that unites these two cuisines. It's a flavor that reminds immigrants of home, no matter where they come from, whether it's Africa, Asia, Latin America, or Eastern Europe. And the funny thing is, it doesn't come from any of those places. I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet into Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. On today's Food into Worlds podcast, Maggie seasoning, a condiment that inspires devotion across the globe and in immigrant kitchens across the U.S.
If other parts of the world can experience Maggie, it brings such flavor to the food. Just very clear. It's like night and day.
That's Yetunde Taiwo, a Nigerian immigrant who lives in Florida, talking about Maggie seasoning. With me in the studio is Feet into Worlds reporter Aurora Almendral. Hi, Aurora.
Hi, John.
Aurora, for those of us who've never heard of or tasted Maggie, what is it?
Maggie is a condiment. You might have seen it around. It's a small bottle generally and has a long neck and a little tiny pointed lid and a red and yellow label.
Yeah, and we had it in our kitchen when I was growing up.
Yeah, a lot of people know it from childhood, and it's just sitting in the shelf in the pantry somewhere.
So give me some examples of how Maggie is adored around the world.
Well, I recently found out that there's a tower in Germany at Kronberg Castle, and the people have nicknamed the tower Maggie Bottle. I'm not sure whether the tower preceded the bottle. I'm guessing it did because it's a castle. And right now it's wrapped in a giant poster of Maggie while it undergoes renovations.
Because Maggie just had its, 125th anniversary?
Yeah, 125 and change now. So it was it started in 1886, originally invented in 1886. Maggie is also – it's sold in giant liter-sized bottles in China and in Poland. You only use a few drops at a time, so a liter-sized bottle is – you're devoted to this stuff.
You got a lifetime supply.
Well, so something close to that. It depends how often they use it. I've seen it served with beef consomme in Mexico City. And in Switzerland, they just, for the 125th year anniversary, they issued limited edition bottles of the labels redesigned by contemporary artists.
Now, what got you interested in Maggie seasoning? I mean, this is kind of a mundane topic.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in the Philippines. Like most people, we're really strict with our condiments. Peanut soup only goes with shrimp paste. Bone marrow and banana soup only goes with fish sauce. And sisig, this dish that's made out of chopped up pig snout and ears, it has to go with Maggie.
Really?
Yeah. So I knew it from childhood. I was very attached to it in that way. And at one point, I was living in Madrid. And I went downstairs to the Senegalese market, fellow immigrants in Madrid, and they had huge liter-sized bottles of Maggie with Polish labels, which to me was very confusing because I always thought of Maggie as this very Filipino seasoning that goes with very Filipino dishes, and all of a sudden, not only is it a Senegalese market, it's Polish.
So you were seeing Maggie in three different cultures at one moment, in Madrid with Polish labels and a condiment that doesn't come from any of those places.
Exactly.
So you talked to some African cooks in the U.S. and discovered that, like the people who shopped at that Senegalese market in Madrid, they have a strong connection to Maggie.
Yeah, in Africa, Maggie is very popular. And for the two African women I interviewed, Maggie is the taste of home. I've seen on Twitter more than a couple of times under hashtag Maggie.
There's a Maggie hashtag on Twitter.
Of course. the line put extra Maggie in it, so I know it's African.
So and somebody tweeted that.
Yeah, not once, but at least twice while I was looking. Who knows how many more I didn't catch. And someone else wrote, every African house should have some form of Maggi in it, whether it's cubes, stock, or liquid seasoning. It's a necessity.
Uh-huh.
I spoke to Devine Muragijimana, who's originally from Burundi, and she now lives in Brooklyn. And I asked her where she thinks Maggi comes from.
I really hope it comes from Africa. I don't know where it comes from. I haven't even inquired where it comes from. All I know is that it's African. Full stop. Wherever else it comes from, they don't need it. It comes from Africa.
Do you want me to tell you?
Oh! Oh! Do you really want to shatter my dreams?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Where does it come from?
No,
where?
I'm not telling you.
But you can tell us. Where does Maggi come from?
Well, I told her that it's from Switzerland, and she was shocked. She couldn't believe it. She goes on Wikipedia just to make before she accepts that it's true.
Aurora, explain to us, how does Maggi work? I mean, how did it find its way into so many cuisines across the globe?
Well, Maggi is supposed to have the appeal of a hunk of steak. So it was invented in 1886 by a man named Julius Maggi. And he developed it as a vegetable-based version of meat extract, which was originally invented in Germany as a cheaper version of meat for people who couldn't afford to buy meat.
But what is it about Maggi that makes food taste so good?
When I asked people to try to describe how Maggi tasted, the original answer was always some version of, I don't know. Nobody knows what it tastes like. It's hard to describe. Then I got words like roundness. Yetunde used the word colorful. When I talked to Topher Chung, who works at Maharlika, it's a Filipino restaurant down in the East Village that serves Maggi at the table.
It's an integral part of Filipino cuisine.
Exactly. He's probably had to explain Maggi to people who don't know what it is more often than not, than other people. And this is what he said.
Maggi is pretty much, besides the vinegar, the one condiment that goes on every table. It's the option of having salt. It's the option of adding like a little flavor depth. What we like to use is the word umami. I mean, I know the Japanese coined that word. The fifth flavor sense? The nondescript fifth vague flavor profile that's never really been accurately defined because it's not actually a flavor. I think umami's more like a feeling. It's a sensory pleasure that you receive from taste.
Wow. That is an amazing philosophical description of something that's a pretty basic food to a lot of people. But how does Maggi actually work? Bring us down to the chemical level.
Well, Maggi contains glutamic acid. And this is a naturally occurring amino acid, and it's in tomatoes, it's in Parmesan cheese, it's in fish sauce. One way people often come across it is as MSG.
I thought you might be getting there.
And I'm just going to note here that not all Maggi seasonings contain MSG, but they all contain some form of glutamic acid.
You mean the different versions that are sold in different countries have different ingredients?
Exactly. There's the Polish bottle of Polish Maggi I have at my house lists MSG as an ingredient, but the bottle of Chinese Maggi doesn't. There's slight differences in taste, but it's not huge. It still tastes like Maggi. But MSG is this funny thing. If you dissolve it in water, just pure, flaky, salt-like MSG, it has a neutral and sometimes an unpleasant flavor. But you put it next to whatever other flavors already exist in your food, it makes them all taste better. So it's a good trick, and it works with all kinds of food, from Chinese food to Polish to Senegalese and lots of other ones in between.
But does Maggi actually have a flavor?
Maggi does. So it's not pure MSG. It has spices and other extracts in it. So it has its own flavor, which I think rides on the MSG trick, but it also has a distinctive flavor, so you always know it's there, whereas MSG you wouldn't.
And you said it was developed originally as a vegetable substitute for meat extract. So is the flavor kind of meaty, would you say?
I wouldn't call it meaty. So it didn't actually get the taste of meat, but if you put it in vegetables, it has that richness that a little bit of sautéed sausage or whatever it was that you couldn't afford would give the vegetables.
Now, you've been talking to some cooks who use Maggi.
Yeah, I spoke with Miguel Trinidad. He's the head chef at Maharlika. And he's a Dominican chef, but he cooks great Filipino food in New York. So he's pretty good at improvising the ingredients of other cuisines. So here he is.
It's something that I was just introduced to when we started Maharlika, and I've grown quite fond of it. In a pinch at a party, we had to do something. We had no seasoning. The truck had broken down, so we didn't have anything with us. And the only thing that was in the house was Maggi. So I took some Maggi, peppercorns, lemons, and made a poaching liquid and poached shrimp for an event. And it went off really well.
Now, as you said, Maggi originated in Switzerland. So it's originally a European condiment. Did you talk to any European immigrants about it?
I did. I talked to Maria Cristina. She's from Austria. She grew up in a town about half an hour from a Maggi factory.
Maggi, it does, for some reason, it does make you feel comfortable because you just know it. It has always been around. So you would go to a restaurant, for instance, especially in rural areas, and you'd find it on the table. And, you know, there's this yellow-red logo on it. And, you know, no fuss, no muss, like nothing fancy. It's just the way it always was. It makes you believe it's the way life should be, but it shouldn't.
The hesitation you hear at the end there from Maria Cristina is that she has reservations about Maggi. She appreciates what it is, but she finds it unhealthy. It's unnatural. It's highly processed. And it's kind of a vice.
A guilty pleasure.
Something like that, yeah. So when I tell her that Maggi is used all over the world, she was surprised to hear that Maggi isn't just an old Central European seasoning. And then I mentioned to her that I thought it was a Filipino product, and she was also quite surprised.
Really? It has a Filipino taste?
To me, yeah. I thought that's where it came from.
Wow, I always thought it had a very Austrian-German taste. It's creepy. It's really creepy. And Africans would say the same thing. Yeah, I mean, it is a phenomenon. I don't know how something like this can actually happen.
And her surprise is, it's not surprising considering that all of the foods really do taste quite different. So this is the definitive trait of Maggi, is that people think that it's from wherever they're from.
As an industrially produced food and one of the first industrially produced foods, would you put Maggi, say, in the same category as Coca-Cola or McDonald's hamburgers and French fries, which are also industrial foods that have worldwide appeal?
It's industrial in the same way that Coca-Cola is, but it has a much different place in people's lives. So Coca-Cola or McDonald's, no matter how hard they try, they're always going to seem like something that came from somewhere else. They're always going to seem very American. That's what their appeal is. Whereas Maggi always seems local. It always seems like something that your fellow Nigerians or your fellow Austrians or your fellow Filipinos came up with because it went perfectly with your food.
Aurora, thank you so much for taking us through the world of Maggi seasoning.
Thank you, John. It was great fun.
Aurora Almendral is a Feet in Two Worlds reporting fellow. You'll find recipes and more about Maggi seasoning on our website, news.feetintoworlds.org. The producers of this podcast are Sarah Kate Kramer and Jocelyn Gonzalez. Our engineer is Chad Bernhard at the studios of the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Thanks for listening to this Food in Two Worlds podcast. I'm John Rudolph.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the New York Community Trust and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation.
With additional support from the Mertz Gilmore Foundation and the Cyrus Fund and WNYC, New York Public Radio.
This program was produced in association with the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and CUNY TV.
Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. We are a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.
You can support this podcast by going to news.feetintoworlds.org and clicking Help Support FI2W.